Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Bennington, Vermont. This talk, delivered on Sunday, April 12, 2026, is by the Reverend Barbara Threat on the topic of Just Peeling Carrots.
It was 1990. San Diego UU's senior high youth group had spent several weeks exploring various meditation and spiritual practices, and now we were focused on Buddhism. We talked about the life of Buddha, discussed the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path, and now we gathered for an overnight at the church to practice mindfulness. We had decided to do this by preparing a meal of finger food in silence, mindfully, and then we were going to eat together in silence, mindfully, and then reflect on the experience with half an hour more of silence, paying attention to everything around us. And then, of course, we'd have some spoken reflection time and lots of talk all night. There are around 45 teens there, and they had signed up for various tasks, setting up the room where we'd eat, washing and cutting fruit, preparing little sandwiches and arranging the room for our discussion, and so on. As the lead youth advisor, I was silently keeping an eye on things, so I stopped to check in on one young woman who was making carrot sticks. She had a big stack of carrots on one side of her and a large colander in the sink and a stack of peeled carrots on the other side. And she was peeling the carrots with great abandon. There were carrot peelings flying all over. A few actually made it into the colander, but mostly they were in the sink or on the counter. On the floor, on the blinds behind the sink, there were carrot peelings everywhere. I tried to mime my concerns. She just looked at me, smiled beatifically, and kept peeling. Finally, I couldn't contain myself, and I whispered, "Carrie, you're making a huge mess. What are you doing?" And she whispered back serenely, "I'm just being in the moment. I'm just peeling carrots to peel the carrots. When I'm done, I will clean up the carrot peels to clean up the carrot peels. I'm just being mindful." And she continues merrily peeling the carrots, and I walked away quietly, somewhat chagrined. Being in the moment, focusing just on what's here right now. Obviously, we can't do only that. Someone was thinking far enough in the future to plan the meal and buy the carrots. Someone had to think far enough back into the past to remember that one of our kids had severe peanut allergies, so that we had planned our menu without peanut butter. Being in the moment doesn't mean that we disregard what we've learned from the past, and it doesn't mean we forget to do the necessary planning for the future, or that we ignore the likely consequences of what we're doing now. It does mean that we don't get so caught up in the reflections on the past or projections about or preparation for the future that we ignore today, right here. Peeling the carrots, just to peel the carrots. There's some wisdom in that. Being present, bringing our awareness to focus on this moment. The Buddhist monk and teacher Thich Nhat Hanh says, "There is only one moment for you to be alive, and that is the present moment. The quality of that moment depends on mindfulness and concentration. Mindfulness is the practice of being fully present, fully aware of this moment, fully alive with your body and mind united. Mindfulness is the energy that helps us to know what is going on in this moment. And yet we live in this world. Each of us has a past that affects who we are. The diagnosis that you got a month ago, the commitment that you made last winter, the obligations that we take on over the years, willingly or not, each of us has responsibilities of many kinds. We each have concerns and dreams, fears and hopes for the future. And as Unitarian Universalists, we believe we have an obligation to be part of bringing justice and hope to the world, which takes work. We have to plan for the future, we humans. We plant crops to provide food for the winter. We update our wills. We repair the roofs on our house. We keep up relationships with our family. The list of what we do, what we must do, is long. If we're wise, we consider the consequences of our actions too. Living or speaking just in the moment without any consideration for the fallout can be disastrous. The events of the past few weeks remind us that there's plenty to worry about and plenty to work for, plenty to protest, plenty to pay attention to, and we need to do all of that as responsible citizens. So then how do we stay in the present moment? How do we practice mindfulness and still get anything done or live responsibly? Is that even possible? Perhaps it's about finding a resting point, a focus, even when we can't stay there every moment. Dag Hammarskjöld, who was the Secretary General of the United Nations from 1953 to 61, and obviously someone who was very much involved in the world, wrote, "In the point of rest at the very center of our being, we encounter a world where all things are at rest in the same way. Then a tree becomes a mystery, a cloud a revelation. Each person a cosmos of riches of which we can only catch glimpses. The life of simplicity is simple, but it opens up a book where we can never get past the first syllable." He's not advocating that we withdraw from the world at all, but that we notice things more carefully, look for that deeper essence, that commonality, and let that awareness infuse and inform our activities, help us to gain some equanimity and perhaps even wisdom. I think of a Buddhist story. Those of you who were part of that Zoom class a few years ago when we explored world religions through folk tales may remember this one. It's called The Broom Master. Long ago, during the time of the Buddha, there lived a boy named Chunda. Chunda was a good child, a happy child, but he couldn't read or write, and he had a terrible time trying to memorize anything. His older brother was a good student, and when he grew up, he became a Buddhist monk. Chunda wanted to do that too. Partially, he wanted to be with his older brother, who he loved, but also he kind of hoped that if he would study Buddhism, maybe it would make him smarter like his brother was. "Why don't you ask the Buddha if you can become a monk?" his brother said. Chunda replied, "It's hard for me to learn anything. I could never be a monk." "Well, the Buddha values compassion and the ways we help each other more than any book learning," his brother said. "Go and talk to the Buddha." So Chunda did. The Buddha observed that he was a humble boy with a pure heart, and he could see that Chunda would try his very best. So the Buddha welcomed him as the newest monk in the community. The next morning, the head monk gave Chunda a short scripture to memorize, just 6 lines, the first of hundreds that each monk was required to learn. But a week later, though Chunda had tried his hardest, he still could not recite it. Sadly, dejectedly, he went back to the Buddha. "I tried and tried, but I simply can't memorize things," he said. "My brain, I can't do it." The Buddha didn't seem disappointed. He saw Chunda's good intentions, and he said, "Chunda, you seem like a hard worker. Do you think you could sweep the temple every day and keep it spotless? Many people visit each day, and the temple is very big, so it needs sweeping almost constantly. Could you do that?" "Oh, yes," said Chunda. "I am a hard worker, and I'm really good at sweeping. I just can't memorize things." So Chunda became the temple sweeper. The Buddha told him to sweep all day and to repeat just 2 lines as he swept. "Remove all the dust, remove all the dirt." But as soon as Chunda began to sweep, the words flew out of his head. Luckily, the head monk was patient and helped him to remember. And by a month from then, Chunda had finally learned those words. "Remove all the dust," he said with one sweep. "Remove all the dirt," with the next. All day long, he would repeat those words. If he had to answer a question or greet someone, he would do so, but then he would return to sweeping. "Remove all the dust, remove all the dirt." Over time, these words became more and more meaningful to Chunda, and his sweeping became a meditation. He began to wonder if perhaps those words were not as simple as he had thought. Did the Buddha mean outer dust and dirt or inner dust and dirt, he wondered. How would one remove inner dust and dirt? He kept repeating the words, sometimes just in his thoughts. Sometimes he even stopped sweeping for just a few minutes and stood still, just looking pensive and thinking about those words. Slowly, Chunda sensed that he had made a discovery. So he mustered up all his courage and he went back to the Buddha. "Venerable sir," he said, "I think I have found another meaning for the words you gave me." "Ah," encouraged the Buddha, "please tell me what you have found." "I think they're about sweeping out inner dust as well as sweeping the floor," said Chunda. I believe that the inner dust and dirt, I believe they are grasping." The Buddha smiled encouragingly and Chunda continued, "If we don't like something in our lives, we grasp for a different situation. And if we really do like something, we grasp it so that it doesn't go away and doesn't change." He continued, "I think it means that we can sweep out the dust and dirt of grasping and leave our inner temples clean." The Buddha nodded warmly at Chunda's words. As the years passed, Chunda swept and meditated and thought, and eventually he became known as a very wise and gentle teacher of Buddhism called Chunda the Broommaster. People came from far places to hear the other monks and to see and hear and learn from Chunda the Broommaster. "I just sweep," he would say, "remove all the dust, remove all the dirt." Being in the present, focused just on sweeping and repeating, it didn't mean Chunda didn't think. In fact, the repetition made it possible for the words to sink deeply into his being and take on a richer, even a transformative meaning. Sometimes being present is doing something simple that allows time for that deepening, or noticing something ordinary that creates that space, peeling the carrots just to peel the carrots, sweeping and chanting just to sweep and chant, slowing down for a moment to really notice what's around us. A poem, one of William Barry's Sabbath poems. "The flocking blackbirds fly across the river, appearing above the trees on one side, disappearing behind the trees on the other side. The flock undulates in passage beneath the opening of a white sky that seems no wider than the river. It is mid-August. The year is changing. The summer's young are grown and strong in flight. Soon now it will be fall and the frost will come. To one who has watched here many years, all of this is familiar, and yet none of it has happened before. Exactly as it is happening now." It's all very familiar, very ordinary. Peeling carrots, sweeping the floor, the movement of the birds and the changing of the seasons. We've seen all of those many times. It's the paying attention that makes them different. Because none of those things, and no other thing either, for that matter, is ever identical to what came previously. It is true that none of us steps into exactly the same river twice. And sometimes noticing what's different can interrupt our busy minds and slow us down enough to notice something in a new way. Not ignoring the past or the future, but stopping to really notice the present, this moment. What's here now? And so we're going to risk doing an exercise. Each of you has in your lap two hands. They have been part of your life every moment of your life. You can't set them down. You can't lose them accidentally. Take a few minutes to look at your own hands carefully. These appendages that have been part of your body for every moment of your life. They hold your past, certainly. faint scar from when you fell off the bicycle, the crooked finger of developing arthritis, the veins that show more than they did a year ago, the rings that tell a part of your history. These hands, your hands, were once so tiny that your fingers could barely wrap themselves around the finger of some adult, although they no doubt tried. Keep looking at your hands. They hold your history. These hands, your hands, they learned to tie a shoe. They held the hands of your first sweetheart. And they opened the door to the first place you lived after you left home, a dorm room, an apartment, an army barracks. They hold your history. These hands, without you thinking much about it, have lifted a fork or a spoon to your mouth easily 1.5 million times, probably closer to 2 million. You just do it. They've steered a car for thousands and thousands of miles. These hands, your hands, have picked up countless objects, opened countless jars, thanks to these wonderful opposable thumbs. They go with you everywhere, these hands. They're an often ignored miracle, your hands, and they have a past, which you can read if you look at them. These hands also have a future. Your hands will continue to get age spots and wrinkles and more visible veins. They may get crooked. They may even get frail. Someday, of course, these hands will lose their flesh and eventually even the bones will be gone. Your hands have a future. Now I invite you to look carefully at your palms. Notice the shapes of your two hands. Where are they the same and where are they different? Notice the creases in each palm. How do they compare? Flex your fingers slowly and pay attention to how your skin moves. It just adapts itself as you move your fingers. You don't have to do anything. It just does it. Look at the patterns on the skin between your palm and the first joint of your fingers. How does it change as your fingers move? Look closely. And your fingertips. Can you see your fingerprints? Are corresponding fingers the same on each of your hands? Or is one like this one, crooked? And that wonderful opposable thumb, which you didn't ask for, which was just given. Let it touch each of your fingers slowly. And see how your flesh moves and how your bones move. Look at the back of your hand as you touch your thumb to your fingers. Can you see the bones under your skin? What do the veins do? Your hands have a past and a future, and they have a present. They are here right now. They are here for you to notice, perhaps in a way that you haven't before. For the last 2 minutes or so, your attention has been just on your hands, right now, in this moment. With all the stresses and concerns that there are in your life and in the world, all the things there are to worry about or plan or regret or figure out, you and your two ever-present hands have managed to be just in this moment. You have noticed them. Been mindful of them. They are good teachers. And we can pay attention, be mindful in many, many ways. We can listen to the harmonies we create when we sing together, rather than just trying to follow along with the words. We can pause for the birds. Notice the arrival of hints of green on the trees. Notice the sounds around us, even in this space. What do you hear when we sit in silence? You can try from time to time to remove all the dust, remove all the dirt. You can even try out Chunda's chant next time you're sweeping your kitchen floor. You can look at your hands from time to time with new appreciation. These amazing things. And as the opening words reminded us this morning, there's a chance that we can interrupt the headlong rush toward or fear of the future, or the bemoaning and dissection of the past, if we pause for even a few moments. And then the tides of life, and they are many, may not be quite as strong, and your strife in your soul can rest in the moment. We close this morning with the words of Henry David Thoreau, who wrote, "You must live in the present. Launch yourself on every wave. Find your eternity in each moment. Fools stand on their islands of opportunities and look toward another island. There is no other land. There is only the one that you are on right now." Peel the carrots, just to peel the carrots from time to time. Your spirit and possibly even your blood pressure will thank you. Amen.